This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. He joins us every Monday in the 12 o'clock hour, and we appreciate saying, Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be with you.
So, Guy, there's a new fraud related to federal taxes. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is an unfortunate one, and a lot of people have been victimized. So it begins this way. You get a phone call on your cell phone, and the caller ID says Internal Revenue Service. So who wouldn't pick that up? The caller then says, you know, Mr. Smith, I'm calling you. You've never had trouble with the IRS before, but you missed a tax payment 2 years ago. We sent you a notice, and there's actually a federal arrest warrant out for you right now. And, of course, what do? You panic. Oh, my goodness, what can I do about it? I said, look, you haven't been in trouble before, so plays upon your sympathy and your feeling that, hey, I'm a good person. If you'll get $5,000 in cash and bring it to the office that we have in a strip shopping center, it's a subsidiary office, we can make this go away. And they're very convincing, they're very persuasive over the phone, and it's not a tremendous amount of money, but it is a big amount of money. It's cash. I had a good friend, a retired physician, got this call. You know, he got 20 minutes into it and was thinking, oh, you know, how can I get the money? It's a Saturday, you know, and then realized, wait a minute, the IRS is not going to ask me to bring cash. But he really got wrapped up in it, and he started talking to friends and realized a lot of them had gotten the same call. This is sweeping. It tends to go through neighborhoods and areas. So it's a new scam. It's an unfortunate one, and it preys upon people's feelings that, yeah, they are a good person, and the scammer's ability to spoof an ID on cell phones.
So the best advice to folks is if you're going to be notified by the IRS, typically it's going to first appear in the mail, correct?
Yeah, the IRS will never call you on the phone. They will never initiate an audit on the phone. They'll never initiate a demand for payment on the phone. They always use the United States Postal Service. So you will get something in the mail. And then you may get something as a certified letter. But you will not get a phone call, you will not get a text, you will not get an email from the IRS. So any of those things, just ignore. And I mean, it is hard. I can understand that. If your cell phone pops up a call from the IRS, it's hard to ignore that. You think, oh my goodness, what have I done? You know, how can I stay out of trouble? But you really need to ignore this one. And the scammers rotate scams. I mean, it's rolling up into tax time, so perfect time to people are thinking about the IRS, they're thinking about taxes, And it's absolutely an unfair scam, and people have been taken advantage of on this one.
The immediacy of our society today really has made the landscape ripe for fraud and abuse, right? I mean, because it's so cheap for them to send out millions of emails.
You know, yeah, and these things, it's really an almost risk-free crime, because what the scammers do, and you know, some jurisdictions have tracked this down, is they will get a little strip shopping center short-term lease, put up a bogus sign that says Internal Revenue Service, get some mules, which are just innocent dupes, to sit at the desk and say, oh, yeah, I'm here to receive your payment. Let me log this in on Monday. You know, they'll be back in touch with you. So even if the police go to that office, they're only going to get the mule that's sitting at the desk, and the scammers get the money every few hours. And when it collapses, it collapses. They don't care, and they move on. So it's essentially risk-free to the scammers, very easy to do, and it just it preys upon people's fear of the IRS, which I think everybody has a bit of a fear. No one wants to get that letter from the IRS saying you owe money and trouble may be coming up. And the phone call is even worse, because it really makes you think that they're up to something. And once again, the IRS is never going to initiate a collection by phone call.
And, you know, and the same holds true with Social Security, all of these federal agencies, for the most part, that deal with your financial data.
Yeah. Yeah. Any phone call purporting to be from a federal agency is almost always going to be a fraud. So, you know, put the phone down. If you think it might be a federal agency, look up the number, call them, see if something's going on, and it almost never is. And as I say, collection efforts just always come from the U.S. mail. The government doesn't use dial-a-dollar collectors.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love warning people, because so many, I find out all the time, just like you, of so many people falling prey to this.
Oh, yeah.
Caught up in this thing with the phone, and it's almost as if it comes to me via text, it has to be real.
Yeah, and this guy was a university professor. I mean, he was not a dummy, you know, very capable, very competent, and the scammers had him going, and if it had been during the work week, I think he would have gotten the cash. It was just the fact that it was on Saturday and the banks were closed, like, I don't know if I can get it right now. That made him stop and realize it. But if it'd been on a Monday or Tuesday, I think he might well have cashed a check and presented the cash, because he was thoroughly convinced that it was the IRS on the phone.
Pretty interesting when you think about it, that folks that, you know, that are should be more sophisticated in the way that they handle their finances, you know, not really so much so. Guy, let's pivot and let's talk about tariffs right now. Having a real difficult time trying to figure out what's good, what's bad, what doesn't matter. Because the tariff language seems to change almost every day.
It really does. And if you think we're confused, imagine being a foreign country. Yeah. We have three different countries that seem to be the targets of tariffs right now. China, and we can talk about China and all the reasons why that probably makes sense. Canada and Mexico, where it makes significantly less sense. And I think it's important to step back a little bit and realize, you know, the reason people buy imports, it's really a threefold reason. One, either the product's not available in your country, so you have to buy an import. You know, a simple example is cocoa. You know, cocoa beans are only grown in a small area in Hawaii. If you're a chocolate maker and you want cocoa beans, you have to import them. There are a bunch of other examples of things that are just not available. It's cheaper. You buy it because it costs less, and the fast fashion from China is probably the best example of that. And then the other is better quality. You know, if as much as I hate to admit it, but if you're getting into some areas, the quality is better overseas. And probably an extreme example is supercars. If you want to get a supercar, you need to get a McLaren, a Ferrari, an Aston Martin, a Porsche, a Mercedes-AMG, a Bugatti, a Lotus. None of those are made in the U.S. The only U.S. supercar is the Ford GT, and it's not as capable as the foreign versions. Same thing in watches. You have better quality watches. Same thing in wines. And there's nothing wrong with the fact that other people do things better. Every country has areas that they're more skilled in, and that's the concept of comparative advantage. So there are things we do better than other countries, and it makes sense for us to focus on that and to export the things we do better. There are things that other countries do better, and it makes sense for them to do it and export to the U.S. So when you think about purchases overseas, we buy things because they're either unavailable, better quality, or they're unique and different from the another country and something that's just not available here. So when we start doing general tariffs in Canada and Mexico, we're really challenging our own economy. And I think one of the things that we've overlooked is the emotional side, because you're dealing with human beings on the other side. And one of the things that has happened is, you know, we have Canada, which is our northern neighbor. We've done more to stimulate Canadian nationalism and patriotism than anybody. And the Canadians are saying, we're not going to be bullied by the U.S. We're not going to be the 51st state. We're not going to do anything. And even though we've suspended the tariffs till April, the Prime Minister of Ontario has said, until we're treated with more respect by the U.S., I'm raising the price of electricity that I send to Minnesota, to Michigan, and New York by 25%. So Doug Ford, the Ontario Premier, has literally said, look, this is now personal. And I think one of the things we overlook is the personal element of antagonizing neighbors. So one where tariffs may make sense if we're being treated unfairly, broad-based tariffs without a clear objective can really backfire. And I think we may be in danger of that.
So what happened? So let's, if we can, remove the faces from all of this. But you have foreign face A that has imposed onerous tariffs on all of your exports to that country. What should your reaction be?
Well, and that's, I think that's one of the fears people have, is if all of your exports are suddenly tariffed, then you say, well, I'm going to do the same thing.
But you they know, are, for the most part, right now, right? I mean, for the vast majority of countries that we have any significant trade with, we have a tariff imbalance. They're tariffing, you know, our goods far greater than we tariff theirs. Would that be a fair statement?
Not totally. It depends on the country and it depends on the goods. We had, before this latest upset, we had an agreement with Mexico and Canada, and things were pretty even going back and forth across the border. That's why auto parts would sometimes go back and forth across the border three and four times before the car is finally assembled.
Right.
Same thing with Mexico.
But that was as a result of a trade agreement. But if you go back to prior to that trade agreement, things were different, right?
Yeah.
I know it started with the USMCA, and then it was called something else. I can't remember what. But before that point in time, you did have this tariff imbalance.
Yeah, that was NAFTA was the original North American Free Trade Agreement. And, you know, historically, after World War II, we've had a gradual decrease in tariffs between the U.S. and most foreign countries. And really, there was not a big imbalance where we had unfair tariffs or they had unfair tariffs against us. They tended to come down pretty uniformly between the European Union and the U.S. Now, you'd have some non-tariff barriers where countries were trying to protect local industries. India is an example of that. You know, they will try and protect a domestic manufacturer against exports. But by and large, in the developed world, the EU and North America, we had gotten to a point of pretty balanced tariffs between all the different countries. And, you know, now we're looking at things and beginning to unbalance them, but unbalance them with us imposing a tariff and then expecting that perhaps they won't reply in kind. But it's hard for a country to be hit by a tariff and not feel that they need to respond.
So when, you know, and there's ample criticism on both sides going both ways as it relates to our tariff policy. And that's kind of, I try to draw to the least common denominator here as to what we're dealing with. If I'm facing a country that's tariffing my goods far greater than we tariff theirs, I just find it difficult to understand where's the equity in this trade relationship. And why would they gain a better position in doing that in order to discourage any of the exports that we have to their country? I mean, it's protectionist, right?
Yeah, it is. And one of the purposes of U.S. Treaty negotiations over the last decades have been to lower tariffs around the world, and it's been pretty successful. We've succeeded in lowering tariffs before this latest round pretty successfully across all the different countries, and that encouraged a global supply chain where people were shipping things back and forth. There aren't many examples left of countries that are having unfair tariffs against the U.S. and then, you know, us not responding. You know,
the president the other day brought up Japan, and I think we had tariffs on U.S. goods anywhere from like 20% to 50%. And, you know, so he announced that he's thinking, you know, in this reciprocity world that he wants to enter into, he's thinking, you know, maybe we should do the same thing to their goods.
Yeah, I think I don't want to criticize the president, but I think he might have he may be misunderstanding the Japanese tariffs. I don't believe that the Japanese are tariffing American goods at that level. I mean, we've had an excellent trade relationship with Japan.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He did say that, though, right? It's like 20% to 50% on some goods. I was floored by the number that he quoted. It was like, wow. I mean, you know, how do you deal with that?
Yeah. I don't think that number is supportable by actual tariffs, because we export a lot of things to Japan, including a lot of natural gas, and import a fair number of things from them, including auto parts. And I just don't believe we have 50% tariffs on the Japanese side. So right. I'd say that would be. And, you know, the president himself will admit sometimes, oh, did I say that? You know, he once said that Zelensky was a dictator, not elected, and then a month later said, oh, well, did I really say that? So
yes.
Some of that is bluster.
Yeah. But it's very much influencing a lot of what's going on in the markets and how, international economies are reacting to the spoken word.
Well, and I think that's one of the challenges is tariffs are a very blunt instrument. And I remember once the president said, well, tariff wars are easy to win. And they're really not. They're very, very challenging. And the idea that if you put a tariff on something, you'll immediately generate manufacturing in the U.S. is really not true. It takes a while to build a plant, to make that decision, and you need to have some stability. And I think one of the things that we're missing is the idea of certainty. And what business hates is uncertainty. It's hard to plan if you don't know what's happening. And the Mexico-Canada tariffs are a perfect example. They're on, they're off. Now they're suspended until April 4th. So we really don't know what's going to happen. But we do know for sure that we're dealing with human beings on the other side, and we've antagonized the Canadians. And you say, well, so what? But they're our closest neighbor. We have the longest border with Canada. And now the Canadians are saying, you know, we're just not going to buy bourbon. We're just done. It's politically incorrect to buy American bourbon. And we're going to pull Jack Daniels from the shelves. You know, we're looking for maple leaf products. And it's hard to know what we're trying to get Canada to do with the tariffs. You know, it's one thing if you have a tariff and you say, look, we're going to impose this if you don't do X or Y, or in order to stop you from doing Z. But the Canadians are thinking, well, what is it exactly that you want us to do? You're threatening us with a 25% tariff, but for what? And I think that confusion is part of the problem, and it's part of what makes the Canadians, you know, sort of, you know, rise up and say, look, we're just not going to do it. You know, we have a new prime minister elected in Canada, Mark Carney, 84%. I mean, that's a landslide. I mean, even Reagan and Lyndon Johnson, who both got big reelection margins, didn't get that kind of margin. So you've got a newly empowered Canadian prime minister saying, we're going to stand up to the U.S. You know, we're not going to be bullied. And the challenge to me is I'm not sure what the objective of our tariff on Canada is. You know, it's hard to see what the get is. If that's the tariff, what is it that we're asking Canada to do in exchange for removing the tariff?
How hard is it to extrapolate this data out as to how much of a tariff they're actually, foreign countries are actually putting on our exports?
There's an agreement called GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs, and that data is pretty available, and the general level of tariffs is actually below 10% across all the different countries in the world. So it's not super hard to look at, and generally tariffs, you negotiate these over time so that people have a chance to plan, because manufacturing plants, any sort of relocation of supply chain requires a lot of effort. And I think the challenge to the U.S. and the reason our markets are crumbling right now, the stock market particularly, is people are looking at the tariffs and saying, well, wait a minute, if they actually do go into place, it's very likely to be inflationary, because remember, the reason people buy foreign goods, they're either not available here, they're better quality in the foreign country, or they're less expensive.
Yeah.
Well, the less let's expensive pick up this inflation.
Let's pick up that conversation right there. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We've been talking about tariffs. Guy, what happens with what President Trump has most recently done, imposes a tariff, suggests a date that the imposition is going to take place, and then 2 or 3 days later suspend the imposition for a period of time? All the while, it occurs to me that people are reacting to the first statement that he makes. That can't be good by any stretch of the imagination, right?
No. What business hates most is uncertainty. If you know what the rules are, you can plan and you can make your decisions. If you don't know what they are, it tends to freeze people in place, and then you have a decision of, I'm just going to wait till I know for sure. Because particularly with a tariff as big as 25%, that really affects the economics. So if you don't know if it's coming, you really have to wait and see. And if you think it's coming and you make a big investment decision and then it doesn't come, you've created a product or a plant that's not competitive. Because once again, the whole point of global trade is comparative advantage. If one country can efficiently produce textiles and they do a great job, the color's good, the quality's good, and other countries can't do it as well, it makes sense to import from that textile producer and then do what you do best. One of the challenges is if we start doing things that we're not particularly good at, that means we have to take resources away from the industries that we're doing very well at and reallocate them. So that tends to reduce GDP. You know, right now we have very low unemployment, good factory utilization. So the economy's running well, but if we have to start making these things that we're importing and it costs more, that's really not going to be, at the end of the day, good for the U.S. economy. And that's what makes people nervous is, are we going to have tariffs that don't have a rational basis? And you know, some are rational, some are irrational. The China tariffs, I think, are rational because, you know, for too many years, China has ignored the agreements that they've signed. And I think, you know, we put in a 10% tariff and that now up to 20. Well, you could realistically say to China, it's, look, China, what we want you to do is actually honor the international agreements you signed. The agreement on Hong Kong, that they will have freedom of speech, freedom of association. Head of the democracy movement will be released from prison because his only crime was criticizing the regime. The Uyghurs, you're going to quit oppressing them, quit torturing them, quit abusing their human rights. South China Sea, you agreed not to militarize it. You're going to reverse that. The deal you made with the Houthis, which is a really evil deal. They won't attack Chinese ships, and you will instead supply and help Iran supply them with missiles to attack the rest of the world? Will China sign the Freedom of Navigation Act? You can't then supply a terrorist regime and say, we want you to attack everybody but us. And then you can't do things like cable cutting, where your ships drag anchor across the North Sea and destroy cables. So you've got a lot of legitimate reasons to say to China, look, we're imposing tariffs, not to mention their support for Russia. Russia couldn't continue the war in Ukraine without Chinese help. So I think if I were looking at tariffs, I'd say, look, China, we're going to impose tariffs here until you actually agree and obey and abide by the agreements you voluntarily signed. I think it would probably be better to leave Canada and Mexico alone for the time being and, you know, let the North American economy continue the way it is, because that's been one of our great strengths, is that big economy with connected interdependence between the three of us.
Yeah, you know, it just occurs to me, I was reading an article the other day, because I think there were some dairy products and some cheese products and stuff like that that the Canadians had, you know, big time tariffs on, because they produce in Canada more than they consume. So they take these predatory actions in order to protect their farmers, which is the same thing we do, right? We actually pay farmers not to farm because of the difficulties that we have in moving these products. I don't know if those are the tariffs that he's talking about with these other countries of being extraordinarily high, but it's hard to really criticize a country that does that, right? I mean,
well, and I think it's hard to criticize, but it's, as you look at time, the industries that you tend to, that you try to protect, almost always suffer. And the reason is you're not competing against the best. And when we subsidize and we try and protect an industry, you ultimately end up making that industry weaker because they're not having to compete to global standards. We saw that with autos when the Japanese first started importing better quality cars that, you know, had fewer breakdowns, better cost and better efficiency than U.S. cars. Well, we're going to protect Detroit. Detroit gradually lost market share, global market share, during that protectionist period. You know, the British tried it with motorcycles and ended up protecting BSA motorcycles to the point where they're paying more per motorcycle than the wages. So that really an ineffective way to do things. I understand the political sentiment. You have an industry at home that you want to protect, but in the long run, it often does the exact opposite. It makes them weaker because they don't have to do the efficiencies that they need to come up to global standards.
Do you see any indication that this administration is willing to take on some of what is otherwise coined as corporate welfare?
I hope so. And, you know, it's interesting, out of all the different lawsuits that the federal government has stopped the Justice Department from pursuing, they haven't stopped the antitrust lawsuits. So they're still pursuing those, and there's a natural inclination for big industries to be rent collectors. If you can create a barrier to keep people from competing with you, then that's a good thing. And I mean, for years, U.S. Steel liked to do that. You know, we're an essential industry. We need to be protected. And successive administrations, going back to Lyndon Johnson, found ways to impose tariffs on foreign steelmakers. The problem is, we wake up today, here we are, you know, 50 years later, U.S. steelmakers are less competitive globally, have a smaller market share globally, and can't compete with the most efficient producers around the world. So we protected them, but it didn't achieve the objective. You know, they were politically powerful, but we didn't protect the domestic steel industry. In fact, the opposite. We made it weaker because they never had to innovate. They never had to improve. They never had to bring in the efficiencies. And that's why when the Japanese company was trying to buy U.S. steel, it was actually probably a good idea, because the Japanese company was going to invest money in the U.S. to make U.S. Steel a modern steel manufacturer, which they're not right now. They're not globally competitive. So attacking corporate welfare is a tough call, but I think it might happen. The administration is populist. They're not, you know, the old Republicans were big company supporters. That's not so much true this time around. And it would probably be a good thing if we eliminated the rent collectors and made sure that American companies were really competitive globally.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. We know for sure that we can't balance this budget without doing that, right?
Well, and we have a tremendous problem in terms of the federal budget. We're going to have to do some painful things. And it is
Guy, if you don't mind, let us pick up the conversation there. Let's get to a break. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back. We're back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We've been talking about tariffs and a lot of related topics as well. And we moved to balancing the budget. And I think that's where we were, Guy, when we left. And you were about to get into that topic.
Yeah. And that is a tremendous challenge. And the reason is the U.S. government through the years from the from World War II forward has never collected more than 20% of GDP in taxes. We're spending about 23% to 24%. So we have a big gap. And the thought of, okay, how can we balance that gap? The challenge is, you can't do it with tax revenue unless you do a national sales tax, because going all the way back to World War II, we've never collected more than 20%. And tax rates have been higher, you know, they've varied a lot, but we have a built-in deficit, and it's primarily the what are called entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. And until we have reached a consensus in the Congress that we need to address those, it is going to be essentially impossible, because if you cut everything else out, you still don't balance the budget. And that's an impossible position to be in, where you can't cut everything else out and just have the entitlement programs.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, I said this earlier in the show today, it would be nice if we just took on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid for a session of Congress and nothing else. And, you know, have the president say every other piece of legislation you send to me will be vetoed until we resolve these three bucket items. Because as you point out, without the resolution there, all this other stuff doesn't even really matter.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, it's getting worse. We're very close to the point where interest on the debt will be greater than the total expenditure for defense. And historically, when a country reaches that point, that's the end of empire. You know, whether it was England, whether it was France, whether it was Spain, when you spend more in interest on your debt than you do on defense, that usually is the end of your period of empire. So it is critically important. And an example is Social Security. That could be resolved with a mix of gradually raising the retirement age, raising the tax base so the bigger level of income is taxed, and reducing benefits for the richest. You know, those three elements put together could work. But as long as both parties say, look, we're not going to touch Social Security, what they're really saying is in 6 years when the trust fund runs out, we're going to have about a 22% benefit cut, which we all know is not likely to happen, but it creates a crisis in about 5 to 6 years.
Sure. It's intolerable, though. I mean, and you know, it's unfair to those that have been out there, you know, working and counting on that and setting up their whole retirement plan based around these benefits that they would hope to take advantage of. And I think it throws everything into a tailspin, which was not going to be very interesting at all. Guy Williams, as always, go ahead.
I was just saying, there's actually an economist comedian who said, to those of you in the younger generation, from thus in the baby boomer group, we had a party, we left a mess, and we're leaving you the bill as well.
Yeah.
You can thank us later.
Yeah. Oh, man. Got to laugh to keep from crying sometimes. As always, we truly appreciate your insight. Have a great week.
Oh, good to be with you. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot. Stay with us. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, we'll talk about the arrogant mayor again. I mean, she's not going to stop until she leaves office, which, in my opinion, is not going to be soon enough. I mean, I really can't believe the audacity of this woman. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit about that. And also, the Saints have restructured Derek Carr's contract. And we'll talk about the tariff wars and a few other things going on in the news.
Scoot's headed your way, folks, on a manic Monday. Hope y'all enjoyed today's show. We'll see you again in the morning.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism, so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.